And then back in fourth may have been...
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
This is Racing Across America, and I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. We'll do a little recap of some of the stakes action yesterday. A little light on the stakes action yesterday, but we'll hit on some of those. And also, I wanted to go back and look at one from last week, because last week, on the Sunday morning show, we pretty much concentrated on Pimlico and Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Days. But there was a nice stake over at Churchill last week that I wanted to touch on that certainly will play out in that division going forward. But again, there were some nice stakes yesterday, just not as many as we normally. We're in that, you know, middle of the Preakness Belmont period lull a little bit, but there was some nice performances as well yesterday. We'll take a look at some of those a little bit later on. Some handicapping, taking a look at the afternoon action, and then our last segment will be joined by Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. Writes about horse racing for the Gazette, among other sports that Mike covers. But he was down at Pimlico last weekend, so I thought we'd get a little some thoughts on last weekend, but just also now we're two races into the Triple Crown. We'll get some of his Triple Crown thoughts. And Mike also wrote a column fairly recently about fans up at Saratoga, so I'll get some of his thoughts there. That's just an evolving kind of situation. I've said, for people who've asked me over the last week and a half or so, I think we'll firm up, I have a feeling, after the Belmont Stakes, because I think with fans being allowed down at Belmont, I think the New York Racing Association is going to get a better idea of what works and what they can make go up at Saratoga, and look at the guidelines and then kind of massage things out a little bit after they get a better idea down at Belmont. I think they've had a chance to look at what Churchill did a couple of weeks back and what Pimlico did last weekend, and then, as I say, they're going to get a much better idea in a couple of weeks down at Belmont. So I think plans will firm up in a couple of weeks, I would think, as far as fans at Saratoga. Let me remind you that today, here at the Clubhouse Racebook, you can take advantage of the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. Always a lot of fun. You can come down and enjoy all the racing action. If you want to, grab a little lunch as well. But have some fun and maybe win a little extra dough by joining in the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. Again, that's this afternoon right here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, let's get to it, and we'll start our stakes action with the Seek again, run yesterday at Belmont. We had Tom Bellhouse on yesterday from West Point Thoroughbreds. They had Decorated Invader in the mix. Decorated Invader was the number 7 horse, and took action, went off as a second choice at 5-2. That was the morning line. I was a little bit surprised with the morning line. As a buyer's guy, I thought Decorated Invader might have to step it up a little bit. So I was kind of surprised, but the betting public was on board Decorated Invader, as I say, second choice. I liked Flavius, the number 10 horse. That's where the betting public went at 9-5. Get Smokin' was in my mix. Get Smokin', the number 5 horse, at 4-1. But I will say, if you watched the handicapper report yesterday or pulled up the one sheet from the website, Get Smokin' was Brian Otto's best bet of the day on the sheet, and then they mentioned it again yesterday in the handicapper's report, and his thinking was, this is the lone speed. I like Get Smokin' in the last two starts prior. Won a stake down at Tampa, and then I liked him in the Maker's Mark mile. So he won the stake at Tampa, and it was a little bit disappointing in the Maker's Mark, but it did look like yesterday he was going to be the lone speed, and that is how it worked out. Brian Otto nailed it. Get Smokin' got out to the front, the number 5 horse, and it looks like maybe he's going to get threatened in the stretch by Flavius, but still plenty left after setting the early fractions, 24, 48 and change, 111 and change. Get Smokin' still has plenty in the tank. Holds off Flavius. Chart margin is 3/4 of the length. Flavius is a nose in front of the number 3, Tell Your Daddy, for second. And Delaware runs 4th in there. Decorated Invader, 5th. But it was a nice run from the Tom Bush train, Get Smokin', who, you know, speed horses. And you, when you have a speed horse like this in the race, the one thing you want to look for is there any other speed? Or might this guy do exactly what he did yesterday? And as I said, Brian Otto nailed it. I like Get Smokin'. I just thought Flavius maybe had a touch more class, even with the pace situation. And at kind of top of the stretch, it looked like I might have nailed it, but no, Get Smokin' had plenty left there and got it done. And as I say, nice little price for the best bet for Brian, $10.80 there for Get Smokin'. And you would have to think we'll see this group or many from this group up at Saratoga coming up in a couple of months in this turf division. So look for Get Smokin' and the Tom Bush trainee, ridden by Junior Alvarado yesterday. So congratulations to that team. Let's pop over to Churchill. Last night, it was a Downs After Dark card. We were offering Thoroughbred Racing here last night, Capital OTV Bet. So hopefully you watched, bet, enjoyed, cash tickets. And there was a couple of stakes races on the agenda last night down at Churchill. The Winning Colors, grade 3 event, 6 furlongs the trip for the ladies, and the horse that took the action, no surprise, the Belmont trained Frank's Rockette, looked really good earlier this season, winning the American Beauty down at Oaklawn. And went over to Oaklawn because Frank Fletcher, the owner, is kind of based over there and wanted to see his horse run at Oaklawn. And so they popped over to Oaklawn and won the American Beauty. A little bit disappointing in the follow-up down at Oaklawn, and the Purple Martin as the even money favorite wound up a close-up second. But yesterday in the Winning Colors, Frank's Rockette, the number 2 horse, goes off as the 3-5 favorite, but doesn't get it done. As Sconson, the second choice, just over even money. Sconson, the number 4, coming late here under Tyler Gaffleone, gets it done pretty easily. The final chart margin is 3.25. Rising Seas actually gets by Frank's Rockette for second here. Frank's Rockette, disappointing third at 3-5. We'll see where that one, that's another one that, who knows, maybe we could see Frank's Rockette up at Saratoga. She was up there last year in the 3-year-old prioress, but there are some opportunities up there for her. We'll see if we get to see her and if there's a rebound coming, because now she's put in a couple of disappointing efforts. Not that Sconson, again, Sconson, Frank's Rockette was 3-5. Sconson just over even money. Sconson's a pretty good runner in her own right. Greg Foley trained, as they say, Tyler Gaffleone on board. Last time out in the Derby City Distaff, ran a good second to Gamine. So, you know, I mean, and a close-up second to Gamine. Given it was Gamine, she was just a little over a length behind in that race last time. So, again, Sconson herself is a pretty good stakes performer and got it done yesterday in the Grade 3 Winning Colors. Turn the page now to the later stake on the evening at Churchill, the Kirtana, 1.5 on the grass. This one was kind of interesting because on the stakes preview that Mike Callahan and I did a couple days ago, we were kind of going back and forth how the pace would play out. And Mike was thinking, you know what, with a horse coming from the shorter distances to the 1.5, Temple City Terror could be a little sharp. I thought that the speed would be Dalika, and it was going to be interesting to see how it played out early in the race. Well, Dalika, Dalika, clearly the speed. It's a various points in the race. You can see there, Dalika, 15 lengths ahead, 16 lengths ahead. However, was not able to hold that. We will see as they come around. Dalika winds up getting caught late by Temple City Terror. So Temple City Terror wasn't the anticipated speed that Mike thought she might be stretching out from the shorter distances, but she winds up getting it done late with a closing effort. Boy, Delica here just kind of loping along on the front end. 24 and change, 48, 113 change, but could not hold off the oncoming Temple City Tear. Temple City Tear is going to be the number four horse, and as you can see there, Delica's the number 10. Tweety Show, the number six, at 39-1, gets up and will run third. Past the Plate was the actual favorite, the number five horse, and that one runs fourth at 2-1. Delica went off at 3-1. Temple City Terror, the eventual winner, went off at 5-1. Past the Plate was coming in off a decent little closing third in a mile and a half stake at Keeneland last time. But I was a little bit surprised that horse was the favorite. As I say, to me, Delica looked like the speed I could have seen going in that direction, but that one went off as the fourth choice. My pick was Delta's Kingdom, and that was the close-up second choice, and I probably would have gone as far as favoritism with that, with Delta's Kingdom. Delta's Kingdom, though, a little bit disappointing, was sitting second in that follow-up pack late, and there you can see Temple City Terror got it done as they came under the wire. Delica runs second, and as they say, Delta's Kingdom, a little bit disappointing for me with the eventual fifth place finish. Again, as the second choice, that one and Past the Plate were both 2-1. They wound up fourth and fifth. Temple City Terror, though, who again, Mike liked the pace scenario, just wasn't in his crystal ball, but they pay either way. So you wind up with a nice $13 and change on Temple City Terror. And again, Mike was talking a little bit about that one on the stakes preview we did a couple of days ago. Again, a little bit light on the stakes, so went out and picked up the two graded stakes from Southern California as well. And we'll look at the Santa Maria Grade 2 event for the fillies and mares going a mile and a 16th. Favorite in here, 2-5, was As Time Goes By. The second choice was CC. CC last time out, a nice win and an optional claimer in the seasonal debut. I thought she was intriguing. That said, As Time Goes By came out of a stakes win last time in the Santa Margarita, so made sense as that one being the slight favorite over CC. As Time Goes By, Mike Smith on board for trainer Bob Baffert. As Time Goes By, when they come down the stretch here, number five horse will get it done. Has to work for it, though. This is a ding-dong battle with this tee. The number two horse at 23-1, the rank outsider, but the Baffert, the Tabor Magner runner here with Mike Smith on board, chart margin is only a nose, and as you can see, the big favorite, that's a bob of the head there. CC, the four horse, winds up disappointing fourth in the field of four at 3-2, but As Time Goes By, goes as a W on the resume, gets an extra little mark in the win column on the PPs, but it had to work for it there in the Santa Maria yesterday, as I say, for trainer Bob Baffert and veteran rider Mike Smith. We were talking about Mike Smith, though, and somebody was asking, some kind of non-horse racing fan was asking about some of the doings in the Triple Crown, and Mike Smith's name came up, and they said, wasn't he in that jockey show? And I had forgotten all about that, the jockey show they did a few years ago, where he at the time he was dating Chantel Sutherland, so they became one of the storylines. But then we both said, as I say, the people I was talking to were kind of non-racing fans, and they said, yeah, that was a pretty good show. And I thought, it was a pretty good show, and it was like one season out. But I've totally forgotten about that jockey show. Moving on to the second stake at Santa Anita, the Honeymoon. Yesterday, it's the three-year-old fillies going mile and an eighth on the grass. Going Global, this was just Master of the Obvious again. Going Global at 4-5, gets it done and gets it done pretty easily. Nice closing kick here under Flavian Pratt. The chart margin winds up to be 4 3/4. Going Global. This is one, you know, if you don't follow West Coast Racing, this is one, it'll be interesting to see what they do. You have a three-year-old filly on the grass. Like the three-year-old boys, there are a number of opportunities. They can stick out there, but curious if if they'll maybe look at something on the East Coast. And I bring it up again, because if you don't normally follow West Coast racing, and again, this one went off at almost 7:30 last night, you might have missed it. It's worth watching, because going global for Phil D'Amato, this is a nice three-year-old turfer. Started the career over in Ireland, but the entire three-year-old season has been over here. Got back to the races, last seen in Europe in November. Got back to the races at Santa Anita in February. And since then, including yesterday's win, four straight wins in the United States. So this is a nice little three-year-old filly going global, as they say, for trainer Phil D'Amato, Flavien Prat on board. And again, it'll be interesting to see where they decide to go with this one, whether they'll continue to pick their spots on the West Coast. But if that one comes east, watch out for going global. And as I said at the top here, I did want to go back and take a look at one from last week, because on last week's show, we really concentrated on the great couple of days at Pimlico. And I didn't want this one to float under the radar from Churchill last Saturday, the Louisville. Nice little turf stakes race, grade three, $150,000. And Arklow went off as the 6-5 choice for Brad Cox. Flojo, Florent Giroux on board. Last seen winning the Hollywood Turf Cup at Del Mar last November. Nice little runner in the Brad Cox barn. And as I said, again, at the top, I wanted to show this one because certainly it'll play out as the year goes along. This is a 7-year-old turfer with a lot of talent, a lot of triple digits in the holster. And we'll see Arklow show up over the summer in some of the turf events. Arklow's going to be the number 10 here. Goes off, as I say, at 6-5. And you can see he gets the lead. And the chart margin winds up to be a length over Red Knight, the number 7. Strong Tide, number 4, runs third in here, but a nice win. You can see, took the lead, and for a minute you thought, maybe somebody will challenge. But then as they got to maybe the 16th pole or so, you felt like, Arklow's in a pretty good spot here. That was career win number 9. Arklow, well over $2.5 million in the bank as a 7-year-old. Plenty of graded stakes wins on the resume, and he puts another one on. Last Saturday night this was, not last night, this was last week. Again, given that we took a look at all the Pimlico action last week, I thought, let's stick this one in just so people get a chance to see it. Because as they say, Arklow will show up in prominent stakes or graded stakes another 2 or 3 times as the summer plays out. I pulled up last night trainer and jockey stats. Always interesting. You get a few weeks into meets just to kind of review and see who's going well. And I thought Belmont and Churchill, I know all the folks out there probably pay attention, certainly to Belmont, but I think Churchill is right in the wheelhouse of a lot of our players as well. Prominent names at both venues. And so just thought it'd be interesting to kind of pull up and see where we are in those meets as far as the jockey and trainer totals at Belmont Park. Jockey race, very close. And again, this was last night, so this includes Saturdays. And I did it late enough that it was after Churchill finished up as well. So the Churchill stats should include yesterday also. But at Belmont, at this point in the meet, Irod Ortiz, one win ahead of Manny Franco. And they are at 26 and 25 wins, respectively. Jose Ortiz at 22. So he's right in the hunt as well. Joel Rosario, 18. Kendra Carmouche, 15. Trevor McCarthy, 14. Eric Cancel, 13. John Velasquez down, 3-6. He's sitting 9th with 7 wins currently. But it was announced, Jay Perriman in the Daily Racing Forum said, John Velasquez announced to be going on Rombauer in the Belmont Stakes. I just have it here on the computer. Flavien Prat, who was on Rombauer, is going to elect to ride Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont. So that meant Rombauer came open. And John Velasquez, who, has been having a fabulous Triple Crown season, obviously had a huge Oaks Derby weekend and had a pretty good Black-Eyed Susan Preakness weekend as well. Be interesting to see what he does down in New York in a couple of weeks. But he'll have a live shot with Rombauer in the Belmont Stakes. So again, top three on the jockey side down at Belmont, Irod Ortiz, Manny Franco, and Jose Ortiz. On the trainer side of things at this point at Belmont, Chad Brown on top with 17 wins. Christoph Clement having a really good spring with 15 wins. Rob Atras with 11. Wesley Ward, 8. Orlando Notice, 7. Bill Mott, 6. Linda Rice and Mike Maker. Really, there's a number tied at 5 here. Linda Rice, Mike Maker, Rudy, Chris Englehart, Rob Falcone, all tied at 5 down there. But on top, Chad Brown, Christoph Clement, Rob Atras, 17, 15, and 11 wins, respectively, for them down at Belmont. That takes you through jockeys and trainers at Belmont. And again, over at Churchill, as we're into their meet a few weeks, on the jockey side of things, down at Churchill currently, Tyler Gaffleone in the lead with 21 wins, Florent Giroux, 18. Then it's a little bit of a drop-off to Ricardo Santana at 10, Luis Saez, 9, Brian Hernandez, 8, James Graham, 8 as well, Julian Lepereau and Miguel Mena, both at 7. But on top three, jocks at Churchill Downs, Tyler Gaffleone, Florent Giroux, and Ricardo Santana, 21, 18, and 10, respectively, for them on the jockey side at Churchill. Over at the train on the trainer side at Churchill, can't get any tighter than this. Three-way tie for the trainers at Churchill on top. Brad Cox, Brendan Walsh, and Mike Maker. They're all tied with 8 currently. Then you get down a couple, have 6 wins. Ian Wilkes and Al Stahl at 5. Bob Baffert, Chad Brown, Mark Cassie, Brian Lynch, and Wesley Ward. So interesting to see how this trainer battle plays out as we go along in this Churchill meet with currently, at this point, Brad Cox, Brendan Walsh, Mike Maker, all tied on top with 8 wins down at Churchill. So, again, just interesting to see. You get a few weeks into the meet, how it is shaken out. Is somebody kind of really grabbing things? And it's pretty, on top, it's pretty tight, both tracks, Belmont and Churchill, jockey and trainer side for the most part. All right, we'll take a break. Again, a little bit later on, we'll be joined by Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette, get some of his thoughts on where the Triple Crown season is at this point. But after we come back from this break, we'll do a little handicapping for Sunday afternoon, so stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrill in the studio. Thanks again for joining us on this beautiful Sunday morning. I'm like springtime attired. It's really been crazy. And I was noticing as I drove down the Northway today, man, it is green out there. It's that time of year, certainly. And it doesn't last that long. I've noticed that the past few years. You get that green period. And then there are certain, like tall grass seems to turn brown, and it's slightly depressing because it's like, man, it was green for like 2 weeks. And then you look over on the side of the road, and there will be that field of tall grass that has already turned brown. So take advantage of the springtime greenness over the next few days. Because as they say, the trees obviously last all summer long, but there are areas that go brown really fast. But today, a lot of green out there, and really the last few days, man, it has been beautiful. So hopefully you've been taking advantage of that. And if you have, you know, you're out in the backyard or wherever, hopefully you're pulling us up on your tablet or your phone, CapitalOTBBet.com. Don't forget that is always an option. You know, if you're planning to play some golf during the summertime, but you want to keep track of the card during the day, put the app on your phone, and you can do that wherever you are. I'll take a look at the late pick five at Churchill on the handicapping segment here. We'll see if we can give out some ideas. Again, I'm not going to give a specific ticket, and it's pre-scratches. I haven't seen the scratches yet, but go through the sequence and just maybe toss out some ideas that you might think about this afternoon. If you're playing that late pick five at Churchill, it'll kick off in race number six, about quarter after three this afternoon. I have the sixth at Churchill. It's maiden special. It's going 5.5 on the grass. 3, 2, 7, and 10. The 8 is also playable, but I put Megan's Clara on top. This is a maiden through the first six starts of the career, but the last three starts have been moving in the right direction via the buyer number. Adds the blinkers today. I thought this had the look of a horse primed for the breakthrough. Dynamite Gift in the second spot. Also, the last couple of starts seemed to, the numbers seem to indicate maybe this one's turned the corner a little bit and also maybe primed for a good effort. Naughty Rendezvous gets back to the grass. The two grass starts, three and four starts back, might be the best starts of the career. In off-the-turf races, the last two, I think getting back to the grass for the Al-Stall runner, Naughty Rendezvous, a player. First-time starter, Town Avenger, at 12-1 by Spitestown. I like Spitestown runners first time out. If you're looking for a price maybe to kick off your pick five, I think that first-time starter is okay. And I will also mention Bold Confection for Danny Garrigan. Again, you have 8-1, Tyler Gaffalione, as we mentioned earlier when we went over the stats, Tyler Gaffalione having a very good meet. This is when the career debut down at the Fairgrounds was very good. It's two subsequent starts are just head-scratchers, though. But I thought moving into a new barn and switching up the surface, maybe we get back to that debut effort. If so, the 8-1 morning line might be interesting on Bold Confection. So I had it 3, 2, 7, and 10, and I thought the 8 was maybe a little bit interesting also. Seventh race at Churchill this afternoon, $50,000 claimers going 3/4 of a mile. 3, 6, 5, and 1. Final Jeopardy at 8-1. I thought this horse was a player. First time gelding symbol, firing numbers that are very good and match up very well with this field. I think the 8-1 will be kind of generous given what's on the page for this one. The race at Oaklawn, 2 back, was, you know, okay. It was a 6th place finish, but it was okay via the number. The number improved with another 6th place finish at Keeneland. I think this horse, again, just seems to be firing the right numbers with this particular group and getting a little class relief. At the 8-1, we'll put Final Jeopardy, the 3 on top. Second slot, I'm Corfu. I won't be surprised if this horse takes a lot of action on the buyers and the past couple of races. This horse deserves to get attention, but comes in from Hawthorne. I wasn't quite sure how the Hawthorne form would class up with this bunch. Have to have it in, but I just put it down in the second slot. Town Champ, last couple of starts were at Oaklawn. I like that factor. Off the claim, comes up to Churchill for Norm McKnight, could be a player. Impressed at 12-1 for Ingrid Mason. I think coming in from Oaklawn is another one that's a little bit interesting at a price. I could also make a case for Senior Jobin coming in from Oaklawn. 2 starts back, 1 down at the Fairgrounds. The Oaklawn race, not quite as impressive, but it's owner-trainer Steve Asmussen, so that's 7 is interesting. I left the tabulator out, Larry Ravelli trainee coming in from Hawthorne, that I also think will take action and is a contender. It's just I was already 4 deep, and I like the 5th horse as well, but I'll mention the tabulator. I mean, if somebody's looking at it saying, why doesn't he have the tabulator in his mix? Nah, I wouldn't argue you off of that one, but for me, in the 7th at Churchill, 3, 6, 5, and 1. Churchill's 8th race this afternoon is an optional claimer. It's a non-winners of 2 other than they're going to go 7 furlongs in the 8th at Churchill. I have a 10, 5, 1, and 4. The number 10 is Lady Rocket. A couple of starts down at Oaklawn that were okay for Brad Cox, and then came up to Churchill and on a sloppy track, just missed running second. Had a little trouble in that race. I think this is another one that I think is primed. I think was primed last time. Went off as the, you know, lukewarm 5-2 favorite and just missed. But again, it was an off track and had a little traffic trouble. I'm going to look for this one to break through with a little bit more of a, uncontested trip in here, and hopefully a fast track as well. She's So Majestic in the second spot. This is a horse that you go down the page, and really the last, three of the last four were stakes company. So I think class-wise is going to match up nicely with this group. Moved from Oaklawn to Will Rogers Downs last time and ran third, but did it in a little stakes race. I think may appreciate the return to Churchill, where this horse has run okay in the past. And in fact, they tried the Derby City Distaff last September. Ran a disappointing seventh in there, but that's a grade one event and just indicates they've had some ambitions for this horse. I think it's going to fit okay in this optional claiming contest. Number one, Ready for Change. 10-1, lightly raced. First two starts of the career were very good. There were two off-the-turf races, however. Tried the turf last time. Disappointing eighth in there. But I'm going to look for a rebound for this one to what we saw in the first two. The stretch out to seven off of those first two starts, which were 5.5, may prove interesting. But I think more importantly, gets back to the dirt, which seems to be the preferred surface. And we have a 10-1 morning line. So the number one, Ready for Change. Interesting. And then Timely Tradition underneath comes down from New York for Ray Handel, who seems like has a little string down at Churchill. At least he's raced a couple at Churchill over the past week or so, I've noticed, as I've been handicapping on OTB Live. But this one comes down from New York to take a spot in here, and you just have to trust looking at the condition book, thinking, hey, I have something that might do okay down at Churchill for $104,000 purse. Why not go down and take your shot? So Timely Tradition in the mix as well. In the eighth at Churchill, 10-5, 1-4. Ninth race at Churchill, optional claimer, non-winners of two other than. In this ninth, I have it 6, 8, 3, and 7. I'll put Hey Dakota on top. It's Mike Maker, Ricardo Santana. Third start off a little bit of a layoff, really in the 21st century, really a little bit of a layoff from January to March, couple of months plus, but, you know, these days. But it is the third start back off of that little bit of a layoff, and the first couple were okay. For last two starts kind of has come from the clouds. Earlier races was in it a little more. I'll hope that this afternoon is also in it, because when you come from the clouds, you're always up against it a little bit. And I mean, this is a nice full field. You have to work your way through the field. You have to get a little bit of a trip. But again, with a couple of starts now under the belt in March and May, we'll hope this one gets up into the thick of things a little bit earlier, so there's not as much traffic and it's not as much to do late. And I think if that's the case, Hey Dakota is solid. Salvatore Mundi in the second spot. Also has a little bit of a closing kick, but does add the blinkers today, which I think will put this one in the hunt a little bit earlier, and silenced in the third spot. This one, on the other hand, last time out didn't show speed, but typically does. And just looking at the rest of this field, there are a couple in here that you anticipate maybe will show some speed, but I think silenced will be the one that they'll have to catch. And given the fact that there really isn't anybody else with bona fide speed. You know, Ocean Atlantique showed some speed last time, although it wasn't a fast pace. I think Silence, the number three, is going to be the catch me if you can horse, and that's always very dangerous. So the ninth at Churchill, I have it 6, 8, 3, and 7. And finally, we'll wrap up that late pick five at Churchill. The 10th race will go off about 5:30. Tonight, I have this one 9, 6, 7, and 3. Maiden Special is going a mile and 16th for $100,000 purse. The number 9, Alejandro, on top. Five tries, hasn't gotten it done yet, but goes out for Steve Asmussen and Stone Street. And as you would expect with those names involved, there's some decent breeding. Hasn't quite lived up to it yet, although this horse did win two starts back, did come under the wire first two starts back, subsequently disqualified, followed that up running third. But again, this is a horse that's already essentially broken through. We'll give it another chance on the numbers of the horses with experience in here. Those last two give Alejandro a clear edge. Second spot, Cryo. The Brad Cox trainee has put in three starts down at Oaklawn. I like that, the move up from Oaklawn. But the last couple seem to be two nice improving efforts. A horse that maybe is kind of figuring it out as we move along the career here. Could be primed for a nice effort this afternoon. Tango. The number seven horse also in the mix. Jack Sisterson, Calumet Farms, was in an off-the-turf race in the career debut over at Keeneland and ran an okay third. Has the look of a race that provides a foundation to build on. Some experience there. Got to figure out the game a little bit and may benefit from that moving into this second start of the career this afternoon. So the 10th and final at Churchill, 9-6-7-3. All right, that gives you an idea on the late pick five at Churchill this afternoon. And again, we'll be looking at that live as well when we come back for this afternoon's OTB Live program, probably a couple hours from now, 12:30-ish or so. We will jump in with some Belmont and some Churchill and much more this afternoon. But we will continue now with a break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Mike McAdam, horse racing writer for the Daily Gazette. As I noted at the top of the show, last week he was down at Pimlico, so we'll get some of his thoughts on the action last week down in Maryland. Some overall thoughts on the Triple Crown season so far. And as I said, he recently wrote a column about fans up at Saratoga. We'll get what he thinks may play out there. And also the column, I'm reasonably certain he was over at Saratoga Harness to see fans there as well. So we'll get an update on what that situation is also. A break coming up. After the break, Mike McAdam. Stay tuned.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTV.com.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as Serious Horse Players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a Serious Horse Player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here. Recently, Capital OTB paid out more than $30,000 to a select group of Capital OTB account holders. 10 lucky patrons shared over $9,000 through our online Pick 5 bankroll, and Capital OTB's Kentucky Derby Syndicate players took home an incredible $20,750 in total earnings. For your chance to be part of future Capital OTB promotions, simply open a new Capital Bets account. Just log on to CapitalOTB.com and sign up today. Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Happy to be joined now by our friend Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on today. How's everything going?
Very good. Look out your window. How can everything be going? We were having trouble getting out of 50, and I got in the car the other day. It's 90. Skipped right over spring.
Same thing happened to me. That's what AC's for.
Exactly. Wanted to touch base with you this week because, as I noted, you were down at Pimlico last week. I'd love to get some thoughts there and overall Triple Crown and whatnot. And one of the things I've been asking people who are at either Churchill and or Pimlico over the last few weeks, just the situation with fans back on track and what it was like. And I've been asking people if there are any lessons maybe to be learned from those two events the last couple of weeks with fans on track at Churchill and Pimlico. Lessons to be learned by the New York Racing Association, or is Derby weekend and is Pimlico and Preakness weekend just such a different kind of animal that we really can't come away with anything from that? But again, give us a little idea what it was like with fans last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think each one of those is a little unique in its own way. The number on Preakness Day was 10,000, was kind of what they capped it at. One thing I did notice was, and you could probably see this on the Derby broadcast as well, is, you know, you get these big crowds and people are kind of get a little loose with the masks, you know, mask requirement. I don't know if they really were observing that much, and I didn't see anybody really enforcing it either. So if you're uncomfortable with that, maybe you don't want to go into these big crowds. Now, at Pimlico for Preakness Day, they did open up the infield. I'm not sure what the number was exactly for the infield. The total was 10,000 on the grounds, and they had it kind of portioned off where everybody had their own little square. I don't know if it was ropes or what, but there was some sort of containment there on the infield, which is kind of weird to see in front of that big stage that they have for, you know, whatever bands they bring out and everything. And they also had spacing on the apron. You know, all the seating there was 6 feet apart, you know, vertically and horizontally. But they had a big crowd. Everybody was happy to be there, as you could imagine. And, you know, how much that translates to what they want to do for Belmont Stakes Day or for Saratoga remains to be seen, especially since, you know, everything is still fluid in New York. And I'm sure the New York Racing Association is weighing every option, you know, to see what, how many people and how it's going to be managed and handled and everything. They've said all along they want to get as many people in at Saratoga as they can. So, you know, they're going to max out on whatever options are available there.
Yeah, and I said it at the top of the show, people have asked me the last week and a half or so, and I said, you know, I think Naira maybe was looking over the shoulder at Churchill and looking over the shoulder down at Pimlico and maybe getting some ideas there. But I have a feeling things will firm up as far as Saratoga a couple weeks down the road when they have fans for Belmont and get an idea of what it's like, what they can do with a bigger crowd. So I think a couple weeks down the road, after they get that weekend in their rearview mirror a little bit, I think we'll get a better feel for Saratoga.
Yeah, and the other thing is, and I asked Pat McKenna at Naira, and I'm having an ongoing dialogue with those guys to see where they stand, and it's constantly shifting. You know, every time Governor Cuomo comes out and says something, they have to adjust. I think they had just firmed up their Belmont Festival ticketing situation when he came out with his last one and said that if you have proof of vax sections, you can put as many people in those as you want. One thing that they won't draw from, like, the Derby experience and the Preakness situation is, as Pat pointed out, you know, the local health guidelines are different from state to state. So it might not necessarily be as translatable as you want it to be. So they're going to look at what they can do and what balance against what they want to do and figure something out. But like you said, after they get cleared through the Belmont, then they'll have a better idea of, you know, what they can do with Saratoga. It is interesting to note that they had their ticketing and admission situation all set up for the Belmont Festival, and then they put out a press release a couple of weeks ago saying an additional pool of ticketing is available because, again, you know, what the guidelines are shifting. So, if they can open up more sections because of that, every time something changes, then they're going to explore that for sure.
Yeah, that's another thing I've said to people over the past couple of weeks. You know, what do you think Saratoga is going to be like? I said, I can tell you today it's going to be different tomorrow, though. It really is completely, completely fluid. And you make a great point about each state has different rules, too. So maybe it is tougher to take something away. But again, even in this state, it's constantly changing. I was looking at your article that you wrote about this just recently, and it seemed like from the article you spent some time up at the harness track, which is now allowing fans. What's the situation like up at the harness track?
Well, I went up there the first day that they had admission available just to talk to some people. I figured there would be some obvious crossover between anybody who showed up that first day attendance at the flat track across the street. And sure enough, a couple people I talked to, I just went there to get a little feedback from fans. It was a Monday noon card. So you can't expect a lot of people to be there anyway. And they, they have a rule where they, at the time, I don't know if it's changed since then, where they had a max out at 200 people, which doesn't sound like a lot, but at the harness track, it's not terrible. And there were probably about 100 people there at noon when I was there. I hung around for a half hour, 45 minutes, long enough to see some 85-1 bomb.
I read the article that you described as hearing the guttural roar of somebody up in the stands as the $180 horse came under the wire.
Yeah, this poor, nobody had it as far as I know. I know I didn't. But people were just fired up to get back to that experience of being able to sit in a seat and hear the horses and hear the, you know, just all the sounds that you get at the racetrack that you don't get over watching on the TV or your phone or your laptop or whatever. So just to get out in the open air and see other people and kind of that shared experience was something that, you know, clearly was valuable to at least 100 people on that first day, which was, I think was like May 5th or 3rd or whatever the heck it was. It was the Monday after the Derby.
Yeah, I'm being, the guys in the control room are saying the 3rd, so yeah, you nailed it. It's just nice to see, yeah, fans are getting back, and you could, through the TV screen, you could get the feel down at Churchill and at Pimlico last week, and nice to know the fans are back at the harness track, and, you know, knock wood, we're looking forward to across the street in a few weeks as well. Let's talk a little bit about the actual races last week, and we'll start out with the Preakness. We'll show the stretch run here. I like Midnight Bourbon. I'm stuck with second heightest this Triple Crown. Mandaloon in the Derby and Midnight Bourbon last week as Rombauer makes the late run and gets by Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit, the Derby winner, winds up third in here. Give us your impressions of the Preakness.
I think running sub 47 for the half 2 weeks in a row eventually caught up with Medina Spirit. It was, you know, he was in position. He was where he's supposed to be, and it just kind of caught up with him. Nice setup for Rombauer, you know, and he was a fresh horse coming in. And he's shown to be pretty good quality. I thought finishing third, you know, behind Essential Quality in the Bluegrass kind of, well, strengthen his resume a little bit. So the division itself seems pretty wide open right now. I will say Medina Spirit, I put him in the penalty box after he tested positive in the Derby on the weekly NCRA voting poll. I stuck him back in at number 3 behind Essential Quality and Rombauer last week. So the Preakness itself kind of played out the way you would have thought it would. Medina Spirit was where he was supposed to be, and then I think that 46 and change for the first half, 2 weeks in a row, over the span of 2 weeks, probably caught up with him in the Preakness a little bit.
And you said it, you nailed it when you said, you know, the division's a little uncertain at this point. Yesterday in the Handicapper Support, Brian Addo and I, we're kind of commenting, and it seems to be playing out the way the prep season played out, and our take was kind of this division won't sort itself out until we get to the Summer Stakes, kind of Haskell Travers, or maybe even a little bit later than that. It just has the look of really being up in the air at this point, the three-year-old division.
Yeah, and kind of the X factor is Life Is Good is still out there, and we don't know exactly when he's going to be back, but they said the fall, whether that means Travers or not, you know, they probably want to get a race in him before they try to tackle that, so maybe he won't make that, but he was a horse all along that I thought had a good shot at winning the Triple Crown this year, and then when he went on the shelf, you know, that kind of opened it up to everybody else where there's no clear favorite right now out of the rest of them, you know, maybe Essential Quality based on his championship last year, and he's run pretty well this year too, but it really is up for grabs, which makes it interesting too. You know, everybody loves the Triple Crown being on the line in the Belmont, but that race is kind of up for grabs, and thankfully Essential Quality, you know, throw his presence in there, and you know, that adds to the luster of the Belmont for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, the filly's not going to go. But the good news for us is they're pointing Malathat up to the coaching club, American Oaks in the Alabama. So we'll get to see her up here a couple of times. She would have been fun in the Belmont, however. But I think the Belmont is shaping up to be kind of a fun race. Talk a little bit about some of the undercard stakes, because I was just kind of looking through the charts here. And I've mentioned it now over the past week. Mighty Mischief over Jackson Traveler in the Chick Lang. Nice three-year-old, another nice three-year-old sprinter for Steve Asmussen. I saw you tweeted out the stretch run of Mean Mary. I took a little pop against Mean Mary. I had her right underneath, but I took a little bit of a pop against her in that race. And about halfway through, I thought, no, that was a mistake. She certainly looked good. And the New York bred, Some Like It Hot Brown, I thought looked good on the weekend as well.
Yeah, Some Like It Hot Brown was pretty good. Mean Mary, you know, when she gets away with 50 and 115, they're not coming back to her. She's not coming back to them. So that was, I liked the horse, but I was a little disappointed in how it was just over so early that you really kind of sucked all the drama out of the finish of that race. One horse on the undercard that I really was impressed with and look forward to seeing is Chub Wagon in the Run Happy Skip It. I love the name, first of all. I don't know what it means, but it just sounds funny. I think somebody tweeted right after that race, hey, bring on Gamine. So I don't know if she's in Gamine's class, but certainly made a big impression that day. So it'll be interesting to see what she does moving forward.
Yeah, you're right. That is worth mentioning as well. Let's go back a couple weeks even earlier and talk a little bit about the Derby. What were your impressions of the Derby, Medina Spirit? As I say, I like Mandaloon. I thought I was going to get a nice long shot Derby winner the entire stretch. I thought he was going to go by. The notable part about that weekend, and again, unfortunately, given the situation, some of the air is taken out of the balloon, but the weekend and the win in the Derby, John Velasquez, he's on a real tear here, the latter portion of his career. It's just, and then he kind of followed up with some nice stakes wins last week at Pimlico, but I thought he was a great story coming out of Derby and Oaks weekend.
Yeah, That was sort of like the mitigating factor of everything else happening with the drug positive. Was like, no, everybody's rooting for John V. I echo everything you said about Mandaloon. I was on him, and I know our friend Brian Natto has been on that wagon for a long time. I had Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality, so the three of the ones that I was kind of keying got beat by the horse who tested positive the next day. So I wasn't thrilled about that. It's Mandaloon. I played him, and I had Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality, and I thought they all ran pretty well, especially Essential Quality. He had such a wide trip. Someone said he ran 68 feet longer than the winner based on, the trackist data and everything. So other than that, disappointment-wise, Rock Your World I thought was going to run better than he did, and he just didn't do anything at all. Had a little bit of trouble at the start, but he was one that probably, in my camp, I would say was the disappointment of the Derby.
And now give me your thoughts on the Baffert situation. I said when it came out on that Sunday, I said, boy, unfortunately, it's taken the air out of the balloon after that was two good days of racing at Churchill. Oaks and Derby Day, the undercard stakes were great. Those winners will play in divisions going out. And so it took a little of the air out of the balloon. And I said, I hope there's two good days of racing coming that kind of get us talking racing again. And it seems like it's played out that way. The Baffert story has kind of disappeared a little bit. Part of that is we're waiting to see what the split sample is going to do. I'm waiting to see when they're going to look at the split sample. But my take was right from the beginning, kind of given what the scrutiny he's been under the past year and a half in his situation. Okay, even if it's the cream and, you go with that, boy, it's just super careless. I mean, with the banned substance on the label, and I get that in California this wouldn't have been an issue because they don't test for this substance at that level, and so I get that, but he's got enough of a staff, you would think, and certainly enough money behind him to have the rules sussed out at all the various venues. And so, again, given his situation, and this is the Derby, for goodness sakes, it was just, at worst, it was super careless. At best, it was super careless.
That's exactly what I said to my editor right after the race. I said, at best, they're guilty of sloppiness, which is really, really aggravating considering they're the ones who said last fall, we're going to crack down, we're going to buckle down, we're going to make sure we're in compliance. And it doesn't matter at all that the amount and the actual substance, which is a legal therapeutic anti-inflammatory, was so small, it's hard to argue that it had any impact on him winning the Derby, but that's not the point. I mean, you guys said you were going to buckle down and be more careful and be in compliance, and how can you not know what's in this rash ointment that you're putting on your horse? I mean, how can you not know that? So it just drives you crazy because, he knows what kind of scrutiny he's under. He's publicly stated that they were going to change their ways and be cleaner and everything, and then this happens in the Derby. It's just, sucks all the life out of the whole situation, and compounded by the fact, but then he gets on and doubles down about, blames everything else in the world except looking in the mirror, with his own practices, and so it really, for someone with his power and his influence and his media presence and the resources he has, this shouldn't happen. And when it does, don't blame everybody else in the universe except yourself. So really, it's kind of a stink over the whole thing. But then, like you mentioned, we come back with the Preakness 2 weeks later, and the people who won it are like the opposite of the whole, Baffert machine. The Fradkins, who have that little two-horse breeding operation and usually sell all their babies, and circumstantially they wound up keeping this one and he wins the Preakness. Kind of like I said in my column, it was a little bit of a breath of fresh air after everything else that happened.
Yeah, no question about it. And people are still had a chance to get focused on racing again, and a couple of good days at Pimlico as well. Although there was the Linda Rice story this week as well, which has played out now for quite a while with the hearing and waiting for the hearing result. I'd love to get your take on that, because my take was, and for folks who aren't familiar, Linda Rice, the accusation was she was getting essentially inside information from the racing office on which horses were entered in races, and then she would decide whether or not to enter her horse, which I get. You it's just unseemly and probably unethical. You can make the case there to get that inside information. I get all that. But they were saying conduct detrimental to racing. My take was, if a horse doesn't get entered, as a bettor, I get the PPs for the horses that are in, and I handicap the race. It doesn't make a difference to me. And if a horse gets entered next week, I handicap that race. So I don't know how it affected the bettors, really. But again, I get that you can make the case that that shouldn't be going on. That all said, then, I just thought the penalty was kind of super harsh. 3 years, I could see a fine and weeks or months maybe, but the three-year penalty kind of shocked me.
Yeah, and if somebody pointed out the hearing officer in charge of all this is a non-racing person, which means they probably don't come in with any context or precedent of what penalties match which crimes or transgressions. So maybe that had something to do with it. It did seem like a pretty harsh penalty. Within the context of other stuff that's happened and the punishment that goes with it. I know they've been investigating this for a while, and it's an integrity issue, and racing has to be really sensitive to those kinds of things. But again, typical racing for it to come out the same day as the the Naira Baffert suspension is just like when it rains, it pours, and so. I think the payment end of it, I'm not sure she's the only one that does that as far as tipping, the gate crew and stuff like that, and stuff that much of it that she portrayed is just sort of like Christmas presents or Christmas bonuses that she independently did. But, the getting the information side of it is, again, that's an integrity issue, and racing has to be really insensitive or very sensitive to those sorts of issues right now.
Yeah, and as I say, I kind of get that. It just seemed like the penalty was really stiff. And it's been
That's
noted now.
Hard.
Yeah, it's noted now that she's appealing, so we'll see how that all plays out.
Yeah, I never expected this to be the end of that story.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. You could see the appeal coming, no question about it. So, again, we'll see how that plays out. Mike, as always, appreciate the visit. When we put your picture up, we had your Twitter handle up as well. People can check you out on Twitter. That links to a lot of the horse racing pieces you do. And I had I had Wilkin on a couple of weeks ago, or last week. I had Wilkin on kind of in preview of the Preakness. And a couple of weeks ago, I had Pat McKenna on. And both were kind of laughing as we discussed how it's going to transpire up at Saratoga this year. And we all agreed. I kind of hope they put us back in the dining room again, the temporary press box. That was the best press box ever.
Well, the only there's a couple problems, including them having to clean up like a big pile of pigeon guano every morning, you know, near our table.
Yeah, I got it on my computer one day.
You know, and that hawk that became our best friend until he started flying away with a little baby robin in his clutches was kind of an eye-opener. But, yeah, it would be awesome if our little group there that was there every day would get our little couple of tables there in the turf terrace again. I don't know if it's going to happen because they could probably – they could probably pull off social distancing in the press box these days anyway, even without, intentionally keeping people separated with the number of people that come up every year. But, yeah, we got to get our tables back, man.
Oh, man, that was great. And for folks who aren't familiar, we were up in that Turf Terrace dining room as the auxiliary press box last year. And, man, that was the life. You felt like you were right there on top of the it was nice, open, and you're out and outside. Yeah, it was really nice. So we'll see. I have a feeling we're going back to the – going back to the regular press box, but
we're back in the trenches.
Yeah,
I guarantee.
Can't complain though. We're at the racetrack every day, so I guess it works out in the end. Mike, always appreciate the visit. Great work again covering racing throughout the year, and looking forward to seeing you up at Saratoga as well. So we'll talk to you again.
Thanks a million for having me on, Seth. I'll see you at Desperate Annie's also. We'll pull that one, too.
There you go. Hey, Desperate Annie's got famous. Owen Wilson was filming his movie there, I'm told.
I saw that. Well, I don't know. I didn't know that he actually wound up in there, but I knew he was, like, in the neighborhood.
Yeah. No, he's...
I think that's the reason. I mean, it's a magnet.
So next time we go, we can maybe look for his stool, and we'll be able to sit on the Owen Wilson stool.
Right. Okay. So Ken and Lent has Jim Croce and Desperate Annie's has Owen.
No, not Jim Croce.
I always screw that up. American Pie guy.
Yeah. There you go.
That guy.
I'm blanking now. But Mike, again, thanks for the visit. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Seth.
Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. All right, that brings us to the end of the show. But I do want to remind you before we wrap it up again, the Play the Ward Handicapping Contest, which is here at the Clubhouse Racebook this afternoon. Come on in, enjoy the racing and Play the Ward Handicapping Contest, which offers you a chance at a little extra dough on this Sunday afternoon. Right here, Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Again, I'm going to be back in about an hour and a half or so to kick off OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll look at a little Belmont, a little Churchill, and more. So stay tuned for that. Or take a break, go get a bagel, come back in a little while as the racing will kick off this afternoon. But as always, appreciate your tuning in this morning for Racing Across America. Really appreciate it. And again, we will see you about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.